Drawing room over here.
Oh, hey, come on in. Last year, her debut solo album saw her nominated for a bunch of Grammy nominations. Next year, you'll be able to see her playing Sister Rosetta Tharpe in the new Baz Luhrmann film Elvis. And right now, Yola's remarkable new album, Stand For Myself, has just come out, and I'm thrilled to have her as my guest in the drawing room on Radio National Drive. Yola, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So take us into the mood for the latest album, Stand For Myself. There's been a lot going on in the world while you've been writing this one. What's been on your mind?
Well, on my mind has been, by and large, the idea of thriving as opposed to just merely surviving. I became aware that this song was being, this particular album and songs that belonged on this album were needed to be sang during the summer of 2020. I felt as though with everything that was happening in the world, with the post-George Floyd epiphanies that were happening all around, that there were some truths that were salient that needed to be spoke on, that maybe weren't being spoke on. And I realized that I'd probably been writing about my musing on what it is to be a Black lady for longer than the writing of this album that I thought I'd, longer than I thought I was writing this album. The first song on this record came out, or I played out, should I say, in 2013. And that was a really pivotal moment in my life because it was the passing of my mother. And that song that was written that early was a response to the idea of what it was like for her and her life and like the culmination of it and like how much I think she'd missed because of such tropes as the strong Black woman and that perception that you need to survive and thriving isn't really an option. You just need to be in service and you need to be perpetually strong, and that really minimizes the potential richness of your life. And so that's kind of what I'm tackling in this record. It's really about how rich your life can be when you push past the trope of being a strong Black woman or being other and minimizing yourself to any kind of trope.
Yeah, that's really interesting because you've said that there wasn't a wonderful track record of women that look like you in music in the UK. There's a version of that narrative that you see in your mother's life as well. That's what it sounds like. Is that right?
Yeah, 100%, you know. Like, it was, my mother came over on the boat, the Windrush, and if you are acquainted with how the Windrush people have been dealt with in the UK, it's not very kindly.
No.
It was a very charitable thing to leave, for all intents and purposes, paradise. My mother was from Barbados. Not too shabby a place to be.
No.
And, you know, ends up moving to some kind of, gritty seaside town and, to help out. Like, you know, that's what went the whole policy was. It was, post-war, it was to help out in the National Health Service, hopefully get a decent pension. The way that the money was supposed to transfer back was supposed to be favourable for the Bajan dollar. And so, like, it was like, we're going to help out, but hopefully it'll be like a nice way to get around the world and travel a bit. We all like to travel, it seems logical. And then you get brought somewhere on a one-way ticket and stuck. And then all the real estate in Barbados gets snatched up from nannies. None of these like holdouts that you see in real estate, thriving zones. Like everyone gets bought out and you go back and it's nothing like, none of the places that your family owned are there anymore. And so it's very like that idea of like really charting your own path, not being tricked into walking someone else's path is a very big part of my life.
Take us back to your beginning. Growing up, how did music become part of your world?
Through my mother's record collection. She was massively into disco, into soul music. into country music, into rock and roll music, into folk music. And so I got a really great education through her records and massively into pop music. I got to know Aretha through her records. I got to know Earth, Wind & Fire through her records. I got to know Elton John and Shania Twain and Dolly and the Bee Gees through her records. And yeah, and also I grew up in the 90s. And so it was a really big throwback era. I don't know if you remember Mary J. Blige's album, My Life. And she, one of the songs, I think it's Be Happy, she sampled Everybody Likes the Sunshine by Roy Ayers Ubiquity. And I was like, I love this sample. What is it? And then you go hunting and you find out who it is. And so that's how I found out about Roy Ayers. And Dad D'Angelo covers Smokey Robinson's Cruising. And I didn't know it was a cover for a while. And then when I find out, I listen to the original version, I'm like, oh, I love that too. And so the era gave rise to finding out about sampling because of the way that R&B and hip hop were at the time. And if you mix all of that idea of like throwback sampling through hip hop and the richness of 70s music pitching itself into the 90s in the environment of what I'm growing up in, which is amongst Britpop and Nirvana and Bjork and Beck and all of this extremely expressive music, it's not really desperately surprising that my music has a lot to it.
So you got into music from your mum's music collection, but you had to hide the fact that you were playing gigs from her, right?
Yeah, I did.
Why is that?
It was a real nightmare. Like, because I was, like anyone that's experienced the strict black and brown parent paradigm understands that there are only three acceptable jobs. You're a doctor, you're a lawyer, or you're an engineer, or you're a hobo in their eyes. And so, like, when you don't adhere to the very, very strict paradigm of job descriptions, like, you know, you've got, and you want to still kind of get what little support you can from your family. You don't want to be a shame on the family, or you don't want to be reprimanded and cast out. You try and toe the line. So I went to university to study French and German, and I got gigs in France. And that's how I hid the fact that I wasn't going to my actual university degree. I was actually auditioning for shows. And I go and I go to France and I do these shows. And I got really fluent, and I still am fluent, and it's very useful. But I was always trying to audition for gigs and to, like, just to get a real start, to actually be out on the road and figure out where I fit into the whole machine. And I was intermittently working in a production company as well as a vocal arranger, top liner as well. But at the time, the production company was young, so it wasn't consistent yet. But I was building. But I had to hide all of that and at least make it look like I was doing a degree until it looked like I'd monetized it enough that my mother would understand what I was doing.
Genius. On RN, I'm Patricia Carvalhos. Yola is my guest in the drawing room. We're talking about her new album, Stand For Myself. So, Yola, we're about to hear Now You're Here from the new album. What's the story behind this song before we hear it?
Well, I was experimenting with writing late at night, which ended up turning into early in the morning. I wanted to turn my brain off and to, or at least my analytical brain, and tap into the parts of my brain that gather information from my peripheral vision and from my environment, and maybe make more elegant connections through my subconscious than I could with my conscious. And often when I do that, I chime into things that are core to my understanding of life. And in this song, I'm grossly sentimental because that's who I am. It's the Finally song. It's a song that speaks on being nurtured and that being a long wait, but finally arriving in your life. And as Black women, you may have noticed through the way that not only Naomi Osaka, but Simone Biles are spoken about when they decide to just like actually just take care of themselves for 5 minutes. The second you stop being in service, the idea of being nurtured can be like pulled out from under you by some folk. And luckily, there are a volume of people that recognize how important it is when you have that pressure to be perpetually strong, to not do that, to actually be a whole human and to be able to say, no, I can't do this actually. Like I'm in physical pain, I'm in mental pain, something's happening, someone call a doctor, anything like that. So Now You're Here is now the person that sees me is here.
Well, let's hear it. This is Yola with Now You're Here. And that was Yola, who's my guest in the drawing room with her song, Now You're Here. And what a gorgeous song it is. One of the ideas that comes up in a lot of your interviews is a narrative, not just the story you're telling about yourself, but the story others are telling about you or trying to tell about you. What do those narratives mean to you, and how do you navigate the different stories and find your own truth?
Well, I feel like when it comes to stories people try and tell about me, I always kind of go out of my way to explain as much as is humanly possible, because I think cognitive bias can play a role in people's interpretation of stories about me. For example, I was a singer in Massive Attack. I sang leads for a year when they had their singer who was unwell, and I stepped in and I started doing some writing, and we performed some of those songs that I wrote, and it was a great tour. The number of times I've been referred to as a backing singer is astounding, considering if you know anything about Massive Attack, you know that they're minimalists.
Yeah.
There are no harmonies.
No, and not a lot of backing going on.
There are no backing vocals. And so that's one thing that can occur quite a lot in the telling of my story, is someone's cognitive bias, meaning that they interpret my role as a lesser role without even realizing they're doing it, even though it doesn't make any sense. And if they were to name drop Massive Attack or knew anything about them or wanted to bring their name up in the conversation, as often people do because it's taggable and all these kinds of things, that they don't even know what they're speaking on. They don't even know that minimalism is an aesthetic, and consequently there are no harmonies, and consequently I couldn't possibly be backing. But it's there, and it arrives in print sometimes, and it misleads people, and no one thinks twice. And because so often people of my hue are in the back. And so that's something that I have to navigate past all the time. And that's why it's important for me to speak my truth as much as possible, because, you know, it can be devaluing to who you are, to like what your team would refer to you as, your brand, to everything. And more importantly, just simply untrue. So, yeah, It's a complicated little world to navigate, and sometimes you have to navigate it without triggering someone's white fragility. But we all get very adept at doing those things.
Mm. I believe Massive Attack actually made you an offer to join the band as a full-time member. Was it hard to turn that down, or did you always know that this solo success was on its way?
I mentioned on filling in the job, because their singer was unwell, I was like, oh, of course I'll fill in. I'm happy to help. Like, you know, I just come off having nodules and I got my voice back after a year and a half of not singing or doing anything. So I was like, yeah, I'll happily take the work. But like, you know, I've got a plan. You guys are minimalists. I don't know if you can tell by the nature of this album, but I'm clearly a maximalist, if that is a term. And so I'm like, we're headed very much in different directions. So I'll tell you out of the gate, I've got a mission, and that's where I'm headed. So it wasn't like it was a surprise that I was like, or it was challenging. It was always the plan to be on my path, because I knew what it was like. I saw the result of what it was like when someone else promises you the world based on their path. It doesn't always design a world that's designed for you. It's curated for somebody else, and you have to just try and fit in it. And I didn't want to have to do that. And so it was never any other option. Like, if the path wasn't aligned, I would have to carry on walking mine, and inexorably to wherever that would lead me.
Well, I think we can all be thrilled you've chosen your path. I always ask my musical guests to choose a song that they love for us, and you've picked Cruisin' by Smokey Robinson. What's special about this song for you?
Well, I think it's part of the era I was talking about before, of discovering it through D'Angelo and through an era of music that was heavy in referential covers and sampling from the 70s. It helped me chart the lineage of music and understand the connection and the idea that nothing is ever lost, it's only transferred. I really liked that, how that educated me to look into music. And obviously, as a song itself, like both D'Angelo's version, but especially Smokey's version, are so beautiful and, again, aggressively sentimental and romantic and soft and just positive in the nature of the loving. And I think I love hearing music that speaks on loving someone in such warm and nurturing terms. I'd always have a sensation of just maybe floating out on a river in an afternoon with a bottle of wine, or, you know, relaxing after a long day. But all these feelings are kind of encapsulated in the melody of this song. And so I never cease to be amazed by how it makes me feel.
Yola, you've been such a wonderful guest. Thank you so much for talking to me, and also for your beautiful music.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Yola has been my guest in The Drawing Room, and her latest album, Stand For Myself, is out now. Let's have a listen to the track she's chosen for us to listen to. This is Smokey Robinson with Cruisin'.
Let's cruise away from here.